Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Newton's first law. It goes like this. An object at rest will remain at rest. An object in motion will remain in the same motion along a straight line unless acted upon by a force. Now, when I say that, I can almost hear the chalk dust slamming against the blackboard as the person writes it down. And they go through and they say, this chap Newton, and they may show you a picture of Newton, person with a long nose, big woolly hair, and says, that's Newton's first law. And you'll often do a few experiments with it. One would be the tablecloth underneath a heavy object. Just whip it out and the object will stay there. You say it's at rest, or it tends to stay at rest. And another one would be in a car without a safety belt. It's in motion, it stays in motion, even though the car stops, and they'll go in Newton's first law. Now, what I want to do about this stage is actually add a bit to how you move from Newton's first law onto a mathematical footing. Now, it's sort of two aspects to it. One, I suppose, is myself as someone coming to this. I'm not standing on a soapbox and selling a particular way of teaching it. And I'm not advocating that you go and teach it the way it's been taught before. I'm more of a research scientist, someone who comes in, looks at the thing, and asks a question. So this is really a question to ask whether this is probably a better way of teaching it. And there's two aspects to it. One is that Newton and Descartes, the two philosophers or two scientists at the same point in time, were at the end of an era where there was no equations, no such thing as writing an equation. An equation is a discipline, a shorthand, which is sort of universal. We have a culture of what goes into an equation, how it's expressed, how it's processed. We do a lot of investment in equations. But they were before, both of these guys were before them. And so, indeed, what Newton did when he wrote his first laws, and that incidentally, he, if just reading back through his Principia, and the issue is, for me, is that I read through it and identify something as the first law. I'm not absolutely sure, and he mentions it several times, I'm not absolutely sure that they're taking, I've read the first law, and people are taking first law from a different area, but the area that I read, he said, this is Newton said, it's generally well known, and that of these three laws, he didn't actually say one, two, three, not in a simple text like that, and definitely didn't use equations and didn't use symbols. So he was in before the time where he'd not used the shorthand of symbols. In fact, a lot of things that are attributed to Newton in that he would reference it to how he had solved that particular problem. So he didn't actually set out the methodology or the new mathematics of calculus. As far as I can read, he used it and said, this problem is solved by this technique. So Newton's technique. It evolved a lot of things for him. Importantly, that the person who did actually state three laws, distinct laws, was Descartes, and Descartes had three laws. I think Newton's and Descartes' laws, the first law was exactly the same. Descartes went off on a tangent, well, not a tangent, well, that quite literally, he began looking at rotating bodies by his third law. Newton stood in just X, Y, Z, pure translation at his in his laws. He didn't cover rotational effects whatsoever. But Descartes came up with the fabulous thing as the first thing of Cartesian coordinates, X, Y, Z, and equations, although he didn't actually use it in his description of the laws. He used it more in his discussion of square roots and how you visualized functions. So, and now, Newton, you can see by his original writings, he didn't like Descartes. So there's that thing across that Newton gives us his ideas in the best language they had at the time, which is written out, and the idea as written is what pretty close to what he's written. And he did say that these are not my laws. These are generally accepted as true at this point in time. So he didn't he wasn't eureka or patenting or anything like that. We go here, and a lot of people don't understand that Newton didn't write equations. In fact, I haven't found one teacher or person I've spoken to who has read original Newton or understands that he was in the age before equations. And a lot of people think that by explaining his laws, saying it's a declared law, that Newton was a very smart person and should believe him, and then derive equations from it, that was proving his laws, was an equation as an alternative description of his laws. Now, where I want to go with this is actually look at how we go to, in steps, from his verbal thing, which is very close to a child's understanding or observation of the world. You can see, if you had to say what happens, it's a description of what happens, a verbal description, across to an equation description. And I suppose I've been at fault by saying, we do equations, and here's the equation first off. So Newton's law is that if f equals 0, a equals 0. And that's obviously too far a step from Newton's basic laws. So, and there's a whole lot of things stepped up here. So we're going to go through here in baby steps. Now, the great thing about Newton's law as expressed verbally is ideal for a podcast. An equation is not ideal for a podcast, but we're going to get there. So, the point of the thing is that when we're talking about kinematics or dynamics, kinematics is a description of motion, dynamics is an explanation of motion. The thing that's moving, we consider it moving, we don't call an object, we call it a body. That's it, something which is free to move. When I push it, it's called a body. Now, so Newton's law of inertia is called. Inertia is the property of something to stay at, wanting to stay at rest or wanting to keep on moving, is the law of inertia. And before they had the word force, they had the word action. You'd put action into a body, and it achieved the property of motion. And so, looking at Newton's law again, rather than using the word object, we'll use the word body. So we're saying, we're talking about two points of time. So what in general is we're asking at a point sort of just moving towards an equation, we say the answer for what the body is in future is equal to what the body was in the past. So the body in brackets, the body in the future, in brackets, so body subscript future. So this is, we're going to bring in some words. So body and subscript means the body at a future. So when you say put in subscript, this is the beginning of the use of language of equations. And it's hard, not hard to get. We're all used to an equation having an equal and operators and things like that. We're going to move in a little bit more slowly and use equations with subscripts. So a body future and the properties of that. So the body colon, I'm going to use colon at the start, and refer to its properties. So a cup, the colour of that colon could be red. The property of red is the value of that property. So an object future equals object past. They're not the same, but their properties are the same. They've got the same property of rest. The property of rest in future is equal to the property of rest in the past. If there's no force acting on the object. So the force equals zero. So if future, that's a object future, or a position of the object future equals position of the object past, if it's at rest and there's no force. That's one way of saying it. And the property of the object velocity, which is the speed and direction of movement in a straight line, is of the future equals the speed or velocity vector of an object in the past, if there's no forces. So you can say the object, and you use a subscript object future. So if you could say the object position of an object, position subscript the object subscript future. So you can see how we're using subscript. So there's two levels of subscripts here, and this is in general just one aspect of trying to move in from the Newton speak into a mathematical speak, but a more specific speak. So when Newton's, the advantage of language is that we can automatically apply it to different things. In equations, there's different ways you can write an equation such that it's a general equation or a specific equation. To make it specific, you have to specify it, and every time you have to go down and specify more. So the position, I'm not writing symbols, the position of an object in future, position subscript object subscript future. So it's not object oriented, it's concept oriented, which is really interesting here, equals position object past, if no force, if f on object equals zero. That's one aspect. And an equation, the second one is that velocity vector, that's this direction and speed of the object subscript object subscript future, equals the velocity of the object past, if f equals f equals zero. Now if you make this differently by saying that if they're equal, so it would be going through the first round of it, that's position object future minus position object past equals zero, if force equals zero. So we're now being able to equation manipulate it. And then the second round of that is velocity of the object, velocity of the object future minus the velocity of the object past. The change in velocity equals zero if f equals zero. And because those occur at different times, we can just say, we can say the acceleration of the object, which equals the velocity of the object future minus the velocity of the object past divided by the time between those two points of time. That's what a is. So acceleration of the object equals zero if the force on the object equals zero. And then you can say also that an object at rest is a case where the velocity is zero. That's an example. So the acceleration, so the first one is that an object at rest will remain at rest. An object in motion will remain in motion along a straight line unless acted upon a force. And talking that through again is to take them up to the idea that the acceleration of an object, an acceleration of a body, so a body equals zero if f on f external on a body equals zero. That's Newton's first law. Now, there's a bit of history. I mean, we tend to go there because that's something very simple and we can actually say it and demonstrate and teach it. There's a big reason why Newton actually, this was a big aha of inertia, because the initial law of inertia is that a body in motion, a perfect body in motion, will go in a circle. And this is what Galileo believed. So Galileo had a bit of the inertia idea, a bit of the time idea, but not fully. Again, Galileo didn't tend to use written equations. So if you read these Renaissance people, and Galileo is Renaissance and Newton is late Renaissance, I suppose we are probably post-Renaissance. Galileo had a ball going down a slope, and going down a flat slope, and he'd get a heavier ball and a more polished slope. But he believed quite correctly that that ball would continue rolling and eventually not go up into the sky, but roll in a perfect circle around the Earth. So he still had these ancient notions of Aristotle, that perfect motion was in a circle, coming back from the Greeks. So this is where, in terms of historically, Newton's first law is a big why he would state it as a critical thing, because it's before he got even into the term of mass, it doesn't have the mass, he would state it like that. And so just coming again, we throw out the word object because it's an everyday term. Body is a science term. And we state his first law, which has got two separate cases, two separate strands for it to describe what's going on. And we demonstrate it by the flower pot vase, the expensive vase, Ming vase, on a table, and whipping the tablecloth underneath it and say, hey, look, it doesn't move. There's no force sent to it. Or we say this object's inside a car will fly forward, Newton's first law of motion. And we'll give the demonstration, the words, the demonstration, but the equation that we want to get to is a body equals zero if F equals F external on the body equals zero. And the more important thing is than the equations is actually walking people through step by step from the verb to the equation, but using subscripts to actually morph slowly between the original Newton and the equation, because that's the journey the human race took, and it's a thinking journey, and it's a linguistic literacy journey. It's not necessarily a science journey, and so it's sort of respect for the knowledge of the system at the time, what people were capable of, and how people's capability eventually grew as people wrote more equations. But it's also for the students. So rather than say A equals zero, if F equals zero, it's important to actually introduce them to the subscripts. And the subscripts culture, alas, is completely missing in the Australian teaching at schools, so it leaves people like myself who go back historically and say, oh look, there's something missing, and people say they're not, and I say, well, can you actually go back and look at the history? No, we won't. We're okay, thanks a lot. So if you're teaching students, can I just say, please just quietly go through Newton's first law and write it out in full, and start using step-by-step subscripts, and saying that at the end of this you'll be able to read what's going on in terms of subscripts and a bit further terms. The idea, you initially almost get into vectors and velocity, an object traveling in a straight line, acceleration traveling in a straight line. And so when they answer the questions, they can have a choice of how they want to answer it. It's quite legitimate to use Newton's verbal formulation, but as they move on, the more and more pressure they're under, they'll want to start using the shorthand. That's why the reason that we went to shorthands because we had more and more situations and we want to communicate clearly and concisely. I'll get on to Newton's second law and Newton's third law. Again, just slowly moving through from verbal to the actual equations, but the equations with subscripts. So equations with subscripts pay deference to equaling the verbal intent. So it's equation with subscripts is a sort of a verbalized equation, which we can see. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.